And of course, this hour, we'll take your phone calls with Professor Slim King as we talk about the afterlife, share your stories, ask your questions when we come back. And welcome back to Coast. We're back with Professor Slim King and your phone calls this hour. Professor, tell folks how they can go see this event that you've got down in Florida.
It's in St. Cloud. It's at the Brews and Blues. It's a big bar there, a full liquor bar. You know, it's a big rock and roll place where I play sometimes. And so I'm there so much, I talked to the owner, and you know, I told him how much it would cost, and he said, I'll just pay for it and make it free. So it's a free event, but it's going to be capacity. So you got to get in there first. And it's the Brews and Blues in St. Cloud.
Excellent. And what kind of music do you play?
I'm a blues player. I play the blues for 17 years. I was Jake Blues at Universal Studios.
That's right.
And almost 20 years at the House of Blues here in Orlando.
Are you a guitarist?
No, I don't. But I dabble in guitar. I play bass out of self-defense. I've been in bands for 40 years. So I've been around, and I'm just retiring this year, so I'll have more time to do, you know, talk to George Norrie.
That's right. We'll never retire. You got to meet our dear friend Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top, who's a great guitarist.
I would love to. He was an inspiration to me when I was younger.
He is one of the best. And John Fogerty listens to our show quite often.
Excellent. Very, very good.
He calls Tom all the time.
I had a question for you. You know, I listen to Audible all the time.
Yes.
And you have Worker in the Light. That is the name of your
book? Absolutely. And our webmaster, Lex Lonehood, has his book called Nightmare Land on Audible as well.
Oh, I love Audible. Now, did you read your book or did you have someone else?
I did it. I did the reading. And let me tell you, it was intense.
Yes. I've done some voiceover work, and I'm in that studio sweating. I mean, it's not easy. You think it'd be like talking to you right now, but it's not.
No, but by the time I was done reading it, Slim, I could barely see the copy because, you know, things start blending together, and it's mm-hmm. unbelievable. And then I had to do the show that night.
Oh, boy. It's stressful.
It's tense.
Stressful. But, you know, it's worth it because the books that are read by the people that write them, they just seem to just fly into my ears, into my mind. You know, I really get what they're talking about. And it's not always that way when somebody else reads your book.
Well, and my audio producer was a staff sergeant practically. And, you know, any word she didn't like, do that again, you know, and we had to do it. Let's go to the phones. You ready? We've got Elizabeth in my old hometown of Detroit. We'll be ready soon, but Tom in Spring Valley, California. Hey, Thomas, go ahead.
Hi, George. You mean I get the honors to go first?
Yes, you do.
That's cool. George, I've been sober 33 years, and I've learned the difference between what spirituality and religious belief is, basically because of books I've read to get myself more spiritual 33 years ago. But I want to tell him, and Professor King, here it is. I see and I know that my friends and relatives are still with me because I can talk to them and get answers from them. And are these examples of what you're talking about, or are they just memories within my own heart?
Well, that's a good question. Slim, what do you think?
Well, that is an awesome question. And could your mind be fabricating these things up and just like writing a book? You know, a new chapter.
That's right. To make yourself feel better, who knows?
Right. And a lot of people say that agree with me that my father, when he came back to me, the very first thing he said was, I'm good. Everything's fine. You know, I'm all right. And but what do people want to hear? That you want when someone passes away, you want to hear that.
You want to know that. That's right.
Yeah, you want and you need that comfort. So was my mind just in my subconscious, you know, writing the story, the script that I wanted to hear? I think it's very possible, but I don't think that's what happened. I think that our loved ones come back and tell us, hey, I'm fine over here.
If they don't come back, what does that mean? That they've reincarnated or something else?
Well, they might just be busy on the other side doing whatever they do on the other side. That I'm, you know, say we were in, you know, reincarnated. Are you trying to go back and tell whoever back there that you're okay here now and I got a radio show and I'm doing, you, do you do that? Well, no, you don't. You're just moving forward, right?
You would think.
Yeah, and so not everybody's trying to regress and get back to their back their life, you know, their old whatever they were before now. And so who, what makes you think that those guys have a reason to come back and talk to us and tell us all about it?
Now we go to Detroit. Elizabeth's with us. Hello, Elizabeth. Good morning. Are you there?
I'm here.
Okay.
Can I just tell you what I saw?
Sure.
Okay. I was told that people have to, most people have to have something called a life review, where you see different memories, things from your life, and it's like a teaching tool. It shows you things, you know, the result of like different behaviors you did with other people, how you affected them. And they told me I was exempted from that. And I was asking them all kinds of questions. As I said, I went through a tunnel. Everybody says it's a dark tunnel, but I could see what was in the tunnel. And it wasn't round. The hole at the end was round, but it was rectangular shaped. It was made of wood, and there were evergreen trees on the east side and the west side of the tunnel. It was a very short tunnel. And when I went through it and came out, I was in outer space.
Whoa.
Going super, super fast, like I was in, you know, I don't know, a wormhole or whatever you want to call it. And I went super fast, and I was in space, and I turned around. I could see our planet. It was how beautiful it was. And I was asking them questions, not using my mouth. I tried to talk to them, but I couldn't talk to them. But when I would think something, they would answer me. So I had telepathy. So we were sending thoughts back and forth. And I said, "Why? Where am I?" This, because it wasn't like a dream at all. You know, not to see all these colors. You know, they weren't like mixtures of colors like on Earth. And they told me I had been murdered. And that they took me up because I had lived a good life helping people.
Now, is this you were murdered in another life? Or
it was like a life after life during the time I was dead.
So, I mean, do you think that you had another life where you were murdered?
I was murdered here. I was murdered. I was working in East Point, 9 Mile and Kelly. For people who are listening who might know the area.
I know Detroit. I was born there.
I was working for Eastwood Clinic as a therapist. And I went around the corner to have lunch. And that's when I got attacked and I was killed. They said that I was dead for about a half hour.
Oh, so you're saying you came back.
What?
You came back. You were dead for a little bit, but you're here now. Okay.
Yes, I came back. They sent me back. They said I had a daughter at home. That she needed me to grow up, you know, and have a good life. She needed me by her side, and so that was the reason why they were sending me back. And they said there was more that I needed to do, you know, in this life on Earth.
How are you feeling now? You sound pretty good.
I sound pretty good.
Yeah, you don't sound like somebody who went through that horrible tragedy. You sound good.
Because I was amazed that when I came back, I had stab wounds and everything. They showed me all the pictures they had taken, and I had like a miraculous healing. They said that it should have taken me about a month to heal, and within about 3-4 days, all the cuts that I had gotten, some of them were quite deep, and they were all healed.
Remarkable. When did this happen to you, Elizabeth?
I was shocked. Like, some of the nurses, you know, were just totally shocked by that. It was, you know, because there was evidence that this, you know, nobody could heal from the kind of attack that I got.
I guess not. When did this happen to you?
What?
Can you hear me?
I say that again.
When did this happen to you?
It was like July, the middle of summer. It was about noon when I went out for lunch. And this was...
Of this year?
Some years ago. I was 32 years old. I'm 61 now.
Oh, so about 30-some years ago. Well, let me ask you, Professor, about the Akashic Records, which is that book that she was referencing. What is that? Slim?
Cat.
You've heard of the Akashic Records?
Yes, but I haven't read the book.
Well, no. This is the book of your life.
The book of life.
It's up there. It's the book of review when you die.
Right. She's had what we call a near-death experience.
Yes. 30-some years ago.
Right. 30-some years ago. And they a lot of people have similar experiences. And one of them is that your life passes before you, which would go right along with this judgment idea that you're going to be judged on all the things that you did.
Who are these entities that send you back? As she was saying, they sent her back.
Well, and I think most people don't want to come back, and they have to be sent back because where they're at, they're just happy to be there. And they don't want to go through death again, I guess. But
they're tranquil.
They're spiritual. They're spiritual beings that somehow are in charge of that part of the transition from life to death.
Let's go to Robert in Tucson, Arizona. Hey, Robert, go ahead. Welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
Hi. I just wanted to mention something. The medium, Arthur Ford, he was proven a fraud in so many ways. There were numerous ways he could have obtained the code, Houdini code. One possible one was it was made public in a biography of Houdini published the previous year. Also, he whispered the code on his deathbed to Bess, his wife, and there was a nurse present who may have overheard it. There are other ways he could have obtained it, but basically, he was proved to be a fraud. The American Society of Psychical Research tested him, and he failed the test. After Ford's death, his involvement in the Houdini seances was shown to be fraudulent. He researched his client's background thoroughly. The material was actually found disguised in his own poetry books. And later, biography of Ford concluded that he cheated on even more seances. I mean, I think you basically have to throw out everything the guy said. He's a fake. Disregard it. He could have obtained the thing through other means.
What do you think, Slim?
Well, I think that is an opinion that comes from people like the James Randi Educational Foundation and other people like that. You know, and they say, well, we've debunked him. You know, that's a word that people throw around quite a bit. But Arthur Ford was the real deal. After Arthur died, they found a file that was labeled poems. And I don't know about you, but my sister wrote poems when some of our friends died. And there's many times that they put poems in your obituary. And in the poem, in this file that said poems, were these obituaries of people that had died. And so they jumped to the conclusion that he researched all these people and did this and that. And it's just an assumption. And so they say, we debunked him. We found he had a file with some poems in it that he said were about people that had passed away. Well, if that was your business, talking about people that communicating with people, you might want to read their obituary. You know, you might want to know more about them if somebody asks you about them.
You don't think he was a fraud?
No, I don't think he was a fraud at all. I just think that he was, involved in all these different things, and he was never caught out. I mean, nobody ever caught him doing anything wrong. He went till 1971 until he just died of a heart attack. So he went for a long, long time, and he was without repute. Nobody ever went after him until after he was dead. And then somebody wrote a book and said this kind of thing about him. But nobody ever said to him, while he was alive that he was a fraud. In fact, he had a Thurston was the number one magician at the time, and he debated Thurston at Carnegie Hall and wiped the floor with Thurston. So he was notorious as a great spiritualist, and that's why he's famous among those in the know. And people say, well, he's been debunked. Well, that's not true. You have to prove it, and no one ever has.
Let's go to Paul in Boston. Welcome to the program, Paul.
Hey, another great program.
They keep coming.
How do you do it?
That's, I got the staff that does it. I'm just the puppet.
Yeah. Well, listen, great. You know, I was coming back from a funeral burying my brother-in-law. We were back at his house. And 8 years prior, my brother and another brother-in-law had died within a year of each other. And as we're back at my deceased brother-in-law's house, and the whole crowd is there, and all of a sudden the sound goes down, and out of the blue comes my deceased, my earlier brother, deceased brother-in-law, and he looks about 30 years younger, and he's dropped about 30 pounds, and coming out from another corner is my brother, who had a body, but I couldn't really tell because he had been cremated. I saw him from the side. I didn't see his face full on, but I knew it was him because he was a very handsome fellow and he had a distinct side view. And the first dead brother that I saw, Neil, walks up to him, extends his hand, shakes hands with me, says, "Hi, Herb, I'm Neil. Come on with me."
Gee.
So, to me, that says, the Bible says, Christ said, "In my Father's house there are many mansions." So that means to me that he was moving up. So there must be a purgatory.
The waiting spot.
Yeah.
That's what it is. Thank you, Paul. Great story. What about, and one thing you haven't brought up yet, Professor, hell. Does it exist, in your opinion?
I think after the judgment, somebody go to hell. I think, yes, there is. Now, Sheol, the grave, some people call hell, but that's this waiting part, waiting for the judgment. But after the judgment, I think some people go to hell, but I don't know if it's necessary. I just think it's the end. I just think it's the end of them.
So you believe in the devil, too, then?
I believe that there are satanic influences, yes. And there is the star of the morning, the Lucifer. So if you want to call him the devil, I do believe there's a Lucifer.
In your dream state, where you help communicate with your dearly departed, as you were talking about some of those techniques, the meditation and things like that, will writing down what happened in your dream state help you at all? Get there a little quicker?
All kinds of people say that is the way to go. I'm kind of lazy that way. I just get up and after I have that dream, those dreams are so real. I mean, there's no other name for it. You know, it's kind of hard to tell what's a dream and what's an illusion, you know, and what's real. And but they are very, very real to me. So I don't take the time to write them down. I just kind of absorb them when I wake up.
All right, we're going to come back and take final phone calls in a moment with Professor Slim King. His website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We've been talking about the other side, and, of course, he's an expert on Harry Houdini as well. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back, Professor Slim King with us. We'll get to your calls as well. Professor Slim, if there was a question you could ask someone on the other side, what would that question be?
Oh, man, that's a great question. I don't know.
That's a tough one, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. I'm not sure what I'd ask them. I'm not sure what I want to know, you know.
I'd ask, do you like it there?
Right. Or I would ask, what should I do in my life to make it better when I get there? what would I need to do? You know, which way, what trail, what path do I need to take to get at a better place when I get there? You know, I don't want to get to heaven and been mowing everybody's lawn.
Well, you know, there are some who believe that there is no punishment when you die, that it was just a setup by mainstream and organized religion to try to control people. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm not sure. What about evil, really, really evil people? I mean, do they not get punished?
They should get punished.
Yes, I think they get punished. I think there is a punishment, and there are rewards. I just think.
What if their punishment is they get reincarnated and come back again and have to do it all over again?
I don't know. That could be. I know the Bible, when I was young, said it's appointed unto man once to die and then the judgment. So what happens after the judgment? I don't know.
Next up, let's go to the calls. Let us go to Dolores in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. First-time caller. Hi, Dolores. Hi.
Hi, Professor King. Hey, I want to talk about the Transfiguration as relevant to what you're talking about now. Because remember, in the Transfiguration, in Matthew and in Mark, Jesus is talking to two people who lived in time, Moses and Elijah. And this event is witnessed by three people living in time, Peter, James, and John. So I think that if there's a question about is there intelligent life after death, that answers it, because Jesus is conversing with these people, and conversing means they're having a conversation, exchanging ideas. And if anyone wants to question this, the Bible's been around for centuries, and it's believed by millions of people, maybe billions of people. So it's an authentic source of information. And so I think the Transfiguration gives a lot of good information on the subject. What do you think?
No, I agree with you 100%. That's a really good portion of the scriptures to look in to get some inside information and dig a little deeper. One of the other things is the Witch of Endor and all the things that went with Solomon and Saul that went on there to actually try to figure out what life is like after death.
Sure is. Jersey Doug's with us. New Jersey, here we go. Hi, Jersey Doug.
How are you again tonight?
Always well.
I'm glad to hear it. Yeah, Professor, I was curious. I had read a story some time back about Houdini, and when he was on his quest to go ahead and debunk all of these people as charlatans and whatnot, he heard about a levitation that somebody could do in England that was supposedly real, that it actually, you know, worked, and he automatically went right out there, took a cross-ocean cruise and went over there, and he was presented to this guy. They met. He had a I'm not sure, you it was pigeonhole me on this. I'm not sure, but he had a famous writer with him at a time who was also interested in the cult. I think that it might have been Arthur Conan Doyle. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But, and then he also had someone of royalty, or at least, the royalty descent there. They had dinner. They had brandy. They went back, and he says, I'm going to do this for you now. He says, I have a room across the hall. He says, this is Houdini. He said, I have a room across the hall. How about we do there? He said, I'd feel much comfortable. I know you won't be able to, the room hasn't been tricked or anything. And he said, if you insist. They went in there, and he stood alongside the bed, and against the wall was a window. He asked the man to open the window, which he did. And then this guy, he got vertical and floated. They said 6 to 8 feet. They were 8 or 9 feet, 8 or 9 stories above the ground. He went out the window about 6 feet and just came straight back in and got horizontal again and stood there. Opened his eyes and said, did that satisfy you?
Jeez.
And Houdini looked around and checked everything out and said, yeah, that was authentic, and claims that there was another sighting that he, another levitation that he had seen in India, where a man used a rope, and they always, you always hear about the Indian rope trick. And he went to see this one individual where this guy claimed this is the real thing. I've seen it myself on several occasions. He got an interpreter. He went there. The man showed him the rope. He examined it and whatnot. He threw this thing up into the air. It stayed vertical. He climbed up to the top of the rope and then climbed back down. He jerked the rope, and it fell at his feet in a coil. And Houdini went ahead and paid this man. It wasn't much in American money, but it was a real lot for Indian money. And he brought the rope from him. He took it back and took it apart, and it was nothing but pure hemp. There was no wire or a cable or anything of any sorts like that. And he believed that also was a true levitation. Do you know anything on either of those accounts? And before you answer that, I just want to say, from one blues man to another, if you give me 5 seconds here, I want to throw a lick or two at you.
That's blues. That's blues. Thanks, Doug. How about his stuff?
That's the blues notes in between the real notes.
Kind of makes you forget about his question, doesn't it?
Yeah. I've heard those stories before, but not with Houdini. I mean, those sounds like two stories.
The levitation's amazing.
Right, that were put together. There are stories of a levitation that was just like that. A guy would go out the window and come back in another window. In these houses, and he was a college student, and all these college students would be there, and he would float out window and back in another window. So that story didn't involve Houdini, but Houdini did go to Europe and hung out with Arthur Conan Doyle, and Houdini was mostly doing all the performing then. So I've never heard the stories put together, and the rope. There's doing a lot of research now on this Indian rope trick, and I hate to use the word debunk, but they are debunking a lot of that. In my opinion, they're, you know, tearing away at some of the videos, because there were videos of the thing, and it's pretty easy to see that they ran them backwards.
Let's go to Sheboygan, Wisconsin. Thomas is with us. Welcome to the program. Hi, Tom. Go ahead.
Hi, George. Great show tonight.
Thank you, Thomas.
Okay, this happened about 7 or 8 years ago when I called and discussed briefly the Russian Orthodox Church's theory that the fallen angels are redeemed.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, I found some scripture supporting that. Job 25:2 states, dominion and fear are with him, and he makes peace with high places. In the Quran, God discusses, God says all his children to come home. And in the hidden text, Jesus says, God does all hell be emptied. So, as I was trying to get to this point, if God can forgive even the devil, how much easier will it be for you to get forgiven by him?
Well, that's something we've been talking about, Professor Slim, about that. How do you forgive those who have committed just horrible, horrible acts? I don't know. I don't know how you forgive that.
I don't know, but we're asked to. I mean, the Christian faith, you're asked to forgive because you're going to be forgiven. So we are asked to do that. So
could you forgive somebody who, let's say, murdered your family members? How do you forgive that? And I'm not talking about a drunk who, you know, sadly, you know, killed your family in a car accident.
Right.
Somebody who went out and murdered them, shot them, or whatever. Could you forgive them?
Yeah, even if they were unrepentant, I would have a really, really hard time doing it. I'm not certain I could do it.
I mean, like this lunatic who killed himself in Las Vegas a couple of years ago, who killed 50-plus people from his Mandalay Bay room window. How do you forgive somebody like that?
I don't know.
Could you?
I'd have to have divine powers to forgive that guy.
I could not. Could you?
I don't think I could. You know,
I know I couldn't.
Right. I just, like, that's why I'm, it's God's judgment. It's somebody else's judgment. Because don't put it in my hands. I'm vengeful.
We're going out to New Paltz, New York. Laura's with us. Welcome to the program. Hi, Laura.
Hi. Thank you for having a nice conversation this evening.
Sure.
I just have a question about Houdini. So in Houdini's day, people had seances and channeling and talking to the dead and being a medium was a whole really big special deal. But nowadays it's nothing. I mean, I have 20 books on my bookshelf on channeling. Everyone channels now. My neighbor channels. I take care of animals and I can channel my dead animals and I don't even do anything. So channeling is very, you know, happening now, New Age thing. So my question to you was, I was wondering, in the whole New Age movement, with channeling and people, you know, being mediums, and George has had many people on the show that have been mediums. Has anyone talked about talking to Houdini, you know, in a new sense? You know, like today, has anyone written any books or any articles on that they've heard from Houdini? And the second part of that is related, is that if you watch, like, those talent shows, like Britain's Got Talent and America's Got Talent, some of the kids and young people that are on there now are extraordinary daredevils and magicians. I think some of the magicians won, like the show won $5 million or whatever. But the point about that is, I was wondering if anyone's heard any reports about Houdini actually being back on the planet right now. So both of those questions.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Where is Houdini, Professor?
Oh, well, let's go with the first one about channeling. I live right by Casadega, Florida, which is, you know, the spiritualist capital of the world, Casadega. And the town is all mediums. And what I think modern-day mediumship is channeling, I think they are channeling. They don't go, there's no real trance mediums. There's nobody that I know that goes to sleep and is, you know, wakes up the next morning with the answer, they just channel. So I think channeling is what's going on in, as mediumship today. I am old school, and I think that you have to be trance medium or you have to be asleep to actually make the connection.
And in terms of go ahead.
And, well, as an example, Jeanette Lucas, who you had on last week, she was sent Kaylee Anthony's teddy bear. And she did exactly what I told you. She drank a lot of water and went to sleep and woke up and knew exactly where the body of that little girl was.
Says.
And directions.
Yep.
The body. And she had the private eye within about 5 yards of the body.
Exactly.
The next morning.
Sad story.
That is the power to me of this kind of communication from here to there.
But no new Houdini cases popping up?
Not that I know of. They'll probably, like I said, they'll have seances like crazy coming up in the next week.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Mostly run by magicians, and I don't think anybody's going to hook up with Houdini.
In the 1920s and 30s, the fraudsters who committed these seances, what did they get out of it? Did they get money? Were they doing it for monetary gain?
Yes, they got plenty of money, and, you know, they had different, you know, they have the Gypsy Curse. They had a bunch of different scams that they could use. So they were getting, you know, a lot of money. But the Marjorie, the witch of she didn't charge anything. She never charged anything. That's what Houdini was after her like crazy. And he never did catch her doing anything wrong. In fact, it was the other way around.
Well, you know, when I look at psychics nowadays, they have to make a living. But those that charge minimally, to me, are probably a little more accurate than those that charge a fortune for the same readings.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of different ways to look at it. You know, I know Jeanette was talking about people to do what they call water witching. My father could do it. And she said, don't charge $50 because it's quite a talent. If you can find water under the ground using a couple of sticks or a couple of rods. And so I think, you know, somebody should, a laborer is worthy his wages. So I think, you know, they should be paid something.
Slim, give out your website and your Facebook for folks as we wrap this up.
Well, Houdini's Ghost has a bunch of the material that we talked about tonight. And SeeTheDead.com is a great site, and it's the International Seance Project, SeeTheDead.com. And they have some cool stuff there that you'll really enjoy. That's Jim Callahan's site.
Super.
He'll connect you up with me if you have any questions. He'll send you my way.
All right, my friend. Thank you. Professor Slim King, up next, we're going to talk about consciousness. Don't go away.